Good morning, everybody. I'm Eureka John, and you are at Eureka Street Creative Podcast Live. It is, what time is it? It is 6:30 in the morning, and I'm in Houston, Texas today, not Leander, Texas, where I normally broadcast from my house. So, this is, like I said, episode 505. So, let them stack up, man. I've been doing this since October 24th, 2020. I'll turn off that music there. I'm not sure how good my stream is going to be because I am from a hotel room. I started off just flipping on YouTube. Didn't know a whole lot about crypto and just kind of wanted to document my learning process. And here I am. This is my brain dump of stuff that I come across on crypto Twitter and articles I read and talking to people. This is my sandbox to be able to play with Web3 tools and all types of other stuff and audiovisual techniques and tools and software. And then this is my message in a bottle to reach out to you all who are listening and or watching on YouTube. And so this recording will be up on my Twitter and it'll be up on YouTube and all that type of stuff. And it'll be up. I'm on all the podcast platforms too. You can subscribe and follow on Spotify or Apple or Google Podcasts, whatever your poison, I'm there. Just search for Eureka Street Creative Podcast and you'll find me. You can find me on Twitter at Eureka John, the number one. So Eureka John one. And Discord, Eureka John, Telegram, Eureka John. And then I'm on things like Farcaster and Lens Protocol, also on Post.Tech. So I also am jumping into the Web3 social media applications as well, trying to, toying around with all that stuff, just like I have with everything else. So that's what this show is all about anyway. It's experimentation. So, So what do I have today? I have, let's go take a look at my little Twitter page here and to see what we have going on. I've been sitting here yesterday, actually. I recorded a show with Spencer, a.k.a. Clinaminic. It's at C-L-I-N-A-M-E-N-I-C, Clinaminic. And let me go over to that screen so I can... let you follow along. Let me get to it. It's a little bit bigger for those of you who are actually watching this instead of just listening to it. Okay, so I want to talk about things like Ethereum attestation services, this Ethereum follow protocol that was proposed by Brantley.eth, things like some digital ID, like what that entails, because a lot of that stuff is creeping up on us. And if you're not ready for it, it could just really take you by surprise. So let me go over here to my bookmarks. I have a couple of clips that I saved about digital ID. And I think it's a really important topic right now because it's going to be basically thrust upon us. Yesterday, I talked about some aspects of decentralized journalism using the Bitcoin blockchain to inscribe things like war crimes and stuff like that, that's uncensorable. And there's a place for anonymity in the digital realm. And there's also a place for identity in the digital realm. I think the problem comes is whenever that some kind of centralized government or corporation is the one to own your identity and have full control over your identity. So that's where I think the struggle is. I want to just play this real quick. Hopefully it'll come through for you. So let's see here. All right. So this is European Parliament member. What's his name? Rob Roos, I think. Yeah. And let's see here. And then we get it to where it pulls up. Hopefully you'll be able to hear it. Yeah. He's a member of the European Parliament, vice chairman. He's talking about these digital IDs. So, all right. Let's see here. Well, the sound's not coming up. I don't know if you can hear it. But anyway, he's not optimistic about it. And he's basically saying to vote against digital ID mandated by the government. Let's see here. People add him back. He's one of people, some people say that he could possibly be, he's one of the candidates to be Satoshi Nakamoto. He's saying, I'm not using it. It's dystopian BS, EU losing its proportionality, personal freedom, freedom's balance, which it used to be better than at the UK establishment. And now it's swung worse. So he's comparing it to the UK. Citizens of the member states have to vote about this, period. In the Dutch parliament, a large majority was against the EID, but it still has been signed by Brussels by one of our ministers. Because a lot of people say that a government and or corporate owned digital ID is the foundation for a social credit system. The strategic Dutch OC says social credit system is coming. This person, Richard Willett, says if people en masse refuse to use it, then it falls on its arse. There's always that way. It can't happen if people refuse en masse to use it, but that's not going to happen because people will use it because they want to be able to log into websites. They have to be able to pay their bills and all that stuff. And as you already see, whenever you log into Twitter here, you have a choice. Right now, it's a choice to be able to log in using your Google ID, right? Or your Google name. And there's a lot of websites like that. And it's just easy and convenient than having to like make up some kind of username and password, you know, and all that stuff for every single site you do. There's an entire industry out of services that allow you to contain all your passwords, like LastPass, for example, and to be able to go and traverse through all these different websites, remembering your passwords. So it's just like, it's not going to be thrust on us and forced upon us and all that. It's going to be a convenience factor, really. And they'll be, oh, it's so convenient, you know, but like the key to evil is always through convenience in a lot of cases, or it starts off that way. What does this say? Many member states are well positioned to achieve the full digitalization of public services and health records. Yes, you know, like I pay my light bill, my power bill, my phone bill, I pay child support and everything like that online. I'd never get any paper envelopes about it. I never have to go down to any office to do anything like that. And it's all done through some kind of digital ID. Now, things like government websites, like child support and stuff like that, Social Security, it all goes through your Social Security number. So I don't know. Some people say, well, it's already here. It's your Social Security number. Well, there's a lot of other things you can do without having to use your Social Security number. But like, just think about having to use the internet just to log in and use that. Is the government or a corporation going to be telling you whether or not you're allowed to use the internet because of a digital ID? I don't know. Let's go over here back to the Twitter screen. Let me pull that up again for myself so I can see it. All right, so I wanted to scroll down to a YouTuber. I used to watch a lot of YouTubers when I first got into Web3 and crypto and stuff like that. One of them was Chico Crypto. Another one was, I used to watch like Ivan on Tech and, you know, even BitBoy sometimes and, you know, all the usuals. You know, there's another one called Digital Asset News, Rob over there, and Lark Davis was another one of them. You know, and all these guys are, you know, they're out there self-serving. I mean, myself included, I guess, but I'm not trying to sell you anything or like trying to push any tokens. But so I don't hate these YouTubers. Just like me, they're just trying to explore topics. Some put it out there like it's definitive truth because it came from them, or they're really trying to push some kind of project or token so they will benefit off of it. There's also some good ones out there. Lark Davis here, he's talking about digital IDs. Hopefully I can get some sound, but we'll see here. I'm going to play it. So 5.3 billion internet users in the world as of 2023, meaning over 65% of the world's population has access to the internet. The number of internet users is expected to reach 6.54 billion by 2025. 9.21% of internet users primarily use smartphones to browse the internet. These are shocking numbers. And it makes you realize again, digital IDs are actually a freaking fantastic idea. It just depends on how they're implemented. Everybody is on the phone. Everybody's on the internet. I mean, right now, the system is clunky. Got to go and take a picture of your plastic identification card and send it off to the internet, where it is, of course, going to get hacked on some centralized database somewhere. Inevitably, it always damn happens. The truth is, digital IDs will be a great force if we can get it right. And right now, it looks like we're going to get it wrong. Okay, so that is Lark Davis's stance on digital IDs. And the whole idea of a central bank digital currency, CBDC, being implemented and coming down to us. And I can think of something like maybe some kind of disaster happens and the government decides to implement a central bank digital currency to provide assistance for people. And in that central bank digital currency, you can program conditions, like say you can program how much somebody gets, how fast they have to spend it, what they can spend it on. You can geofence it to where they can spend that money and stuff like that. And, there can be certain conditions added in there, like maybe somebody posts something kind of inflammatory on social media, and that can affect how much money they get or what they can spend their money on or things like that. This surveillance aspect that comes with the CBDC and the constriction that comes from a centralized entity is what the problem is. And that's what Lark Davis is really talking about, saying it can be amazing if we get it right. You can take your portable digital decentralized ID to all types of websites. They don't get to collect your data. You get to own your data. You get to get paid for it and all that stuff if you have a decentralized ID. But if you have a centralized ID based on a centralized bank digital currency, central bank digital currency, CBDC, then that's where all this dystopia, enslavement, and imprisonment happens, and basically technological imprisonment. Let me go check this YouTube stream here real quick just to make sure everything's still on track. Okay, cool. All right. So let me take the screen off of Lark here, and I want to go just kind of explore into some of these aspects of digital IDs. There is so much research going on digital IDs right now. It's insane. Let me go back to my bookmarks. And I was already in it. Let me scroll down. All right, so here's an Ethereum follow protocol. If you have a digital ID and everybody has some kind of digital ID and it's tied to like the Ethereum blockchain, or if it's tied to your Bitcoin wallet or something like that, then you can basically take all your NFTs, your tokens, you can take your POAPs, the proof of attendance protocol badges and all that type of stuff. And just take it with you. Like if you don't like some kind of website or the way some kind of institution functions, you can take your ID and all your data, and then you can take it with you and go somewhere else. And that's a decentralized ID. And the authority that issues that ID is based on the blockchain. In this case, it would be an Ethereum blockchain. It could be Bitcoin blockchain. It could be whatever blockchain. And if you don't like one particular blockchain, you don't think it's decentralized enough, you could create an ID on another blockchain that has more decentralization to it, so let's look at here. Brantley.eth said, thesis: Ethereum needs a native protocol for following other Ethereum accounts. So you could follow your other friends basically and then add them to your account and have them update without you having to log in something like Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. You could just follow their identity, their blockchain-based identity, their digital ID. So let's go take a look at one of the articles written by Brantley.eth. Let's see here. The TLDR is unbundle the elements of identity to their smallest viable parts and have separate teams solve them individually with decentralized protocols and open standards. In its mature state, your Web3 identity will be the sum of the information and relationships held in various decentralized protocols and open standards, which I call the Web3 identity stack. And briefly, the internet started off as a decentralized internet. You know, TCP/IP is a protocol, and it wasn't owned by any corporation. Like, the person that invented TCP/IP, if they held some kind of rights to it or copyrighted it or whatever, they would basically be ruling the world. They'd be so wealthy. But that didn't happen. And TCP/IP is an open protocol. But what happened is companies came in and they started creating these password access websites, like Facebook and MySpace. They started collecting your information. The way the internet works is there's all these servers that whenever you enter in your information, you create your profiles, you upload your pictures, you make your comments and all that, it collects all that data, and they sell that data to marketing companies. And so if the product is free, there's nothing free. If the product is free, you're the product, right? So that, I think that's how it goes. So all your data to them is the product. So they can sell all that information about you to marketing companies, to whoever, or even have to give it to government agencies to use against you. And that is web two, right? So web three is here is the ability to have your wallet. Yes. Have using your, so, okay. A web page, like, for instance, think about this, like the first Wall Street Journal web page looked like it was basically like a PDF of the newspaper, right? And we used the same model of a newspaper to be able to convey a digital newspaper. Well, as you know, time has progressed, the Wall Street Journal looks a lot different. There's all types of widgets in there. You log in, you know, like all types of pictures and all. Yeah, it just looks a lot different than just a PDF of a newspaper. So that's kind of like the whole idea behind crypto and the name for your cryptographic private key that signifies a place where you can put some of your assets. And, you know, it's a wallet because it's tied to financial assets. And like I said in the last episode, the whole idea of finances are kind of a Trojan horse to bring in crypto into normalcy and into the perfect use case, because then you can branch out from finances. Yesterday, I talked about censorship and journalism and being able to verify things on blockchain and being able to fight against things like deep fakes and all that stuff. Like, decentralized blockchain applications allow this to happen. And so a decentralized wallet allow a decentralized non-corporate or government entity owned identification. Because if the government owns your ID, they own you, right? But if there's no one entity owning your ID, if it's just a protocol just out there like TCP/IP, allowing communication to be able to happen between computer nodes, then there's no owner to your ID except for you, right? And you know, they say, well, you know, people are storing my information on computers. Well, that computers, all those computers are thousands and thousands and thousands of nodes on a network. And if one person decides to try to take control of your identity, that's just one node on thousands of nodes. And no one person can completely control all your information except for you, because you hold the private keys, right? So, yeah. So the whole idea of a wallet can be expanded to mean like your network, like who you know, your history, your internet history, your purchase history, your NFTs and things like that, all types of stuff. So I'll just read the introduction here. The idea of using Ethereum for identity goes back to the beginning. One of five application categories listed in Vitalik Buterin's Ethereum white paper published in 2014 is identity and reputation systems. Today, we have a few primitives of the Web3 identity stack in place, but much more work is needed. And there are a lot of projects trying to work on identity solutions right now, because it's a really slippery bar of soap to try to hold on to, because there's always some way of somebody to take control of your identity in a digital space except for you, you know? So it's really hard to verify that you're not a bot. It's really hard to completely hold on to all the information, like the cryptographic seed phrases and all that stuff is it can get, it gets really complex for a lot of the average people to have to worry about. So anyway, and more work is warranted. The total addressable market for identity is ultimately every person in the world, not to mention identity for corporations, groups, devices, et cetera. So identity could become the Ethereum use case utilized by the largest number of people. And it's always been said, even since the beginning when I got into crypto, like Bitcoin is like digital gold, even though I think it's well beyond that now. And Ethereum was the world operating system, you know. So Ethereum has never really been about like being a monetary product. Yes, the ETH token is used for gas to pay for any type of interaction or transaction on the internet. And that's basically to provide security against things like DDoS attacks, which is basically a hacker or some kind of criminal using overloading a system through some kind of form to be able to crash a website. And so if you have to pay for that type of attack, people are less likely to do those attacks on a system. So that's one of the reasons gas is there, to provide security. And it's also used to incentivize people who are running the nodes and stuff like that hold all the information and that create the network. So anyway, where was I going on that? Anyway, so yeah, no, Ethereum has never, in my eyes, never really been about some kind of financial application, even though there are financial applications built using Ethereum, like decentralized finance applications. That's a whole other wormhole. All right, so in fact, just about everything you do in Web3 tells others something about who you are. Web3 identity is really the meta Ethereum use case of which everything else is a part. The real Ethereum is the friends we've made along the way, ironically, actually, because I got into crypto in October 24th, 2020 is when I switched on my YouTube. I started getting into crypto in 2018. And that's when I bought my first Bitcoin and XRP back then. But I didn't really know anybody and I had nobody to talk to. And that's why I watched so many YouTubers back then. Because I didn't have my message in a bottle. So this YouTube channel became my message in a bottle. And then I joined the Bankless DAO and I just started getting to know all these other like-minded people who see the same issues going on. And so it really is about all the friends I've made along the way through Ethereum. So anyway, Brantley says, in this blog post, I expand on my comments about Web3 identity primitives from my Twitter post proposing about the Ethereum follow-up protocol. And the Ethereum follow-up protocol is a little down the road from where I want to talk about right now. I want to talk more about digital ID. So yeah, I'm not really going to go into the Ethereum follow-up protocol. And there's also something else that I talked about on the Journal podcast Press Fix with Glenn Minnick yesterday that I started, is Ethereum attestation service, which is basically like a notary public almost on the Ethereum protocol, and it can use your digital identity to strengthen some kind of social graph, but I'm not there yet either. So I want to kind of continue a little further down this article. Let me just double check my stream, and being in a hotel room, it can get a little wonky. Okay, cool. All right. So let me go back to this article. And I've been going for 23 minutes. I'll probably go for about 7 more minutes and then just, you know, cut it off at 30, since I am trying to do this from a hotel. Anyway, so there's a constellation of protocols. Like I said, there's a lot of people in this decentralized ID space. This is a slippery bar of soap that people are trying to solve. There are a lot of people creating protocols. And yeah, it's good to see a lot of people working on this stuff. So instead, we need to take the elements of digital ID that have normally been bundled in siloed, centralized Web2 systems. Like, you know, you have your digital ID in siloed things like Facebook, Instagram, Google IDs, and unbundle their elements to the smallest viable parts and have separate teams solve them individually with decentralized protocol and open standards. So in its mature state, your Web3 identity will be the sum of information and relationships held in a constellation of decentralized protocols and open standards. Think TCP/IP, right? Think the POP email protocol. It's a free protocol. Like, literally, you don't have to get a Gmail account, technically. Like, you could fire up an email. So if you have the technical knowledge, you can do all this stuff yourself. Like, you don't have to have that interface. You don't have to have Hotmail, Gmail, and all that stuff. You know, like you could fire up an email server and you could do the POP email protocol and do it yourself. But there's a thing though, is now spam filters and, you know, Google Mail and Gmail and all that stuff they've kind of overpowered a lot of that stuff. And they will, if you don't really know how to work around that, they will automatically filter out a lot of stuff coming from, you know, homemade email protocols. But that's a whole other topic in itself and problem. So that's another reason for decentralization, right? So in its Web3, in its mature state, your Web3 identity will be the sum of information and relationships held in a constellation of decentralized protocols and open standards, which I call the Web3 identity stack. Services can then make use of this stack, which will remain fundamentally decentralized at the protocol level and thus portable between services. What makes it Web3 is that centralized entities will not run the fundamental primitives as they do in Web2, right? So it's important because, yeah, so, yeah, all right. Anyway, it's important to unbundle the elements at their, it's important to unbundle the elements at their smallest viable parts, because building and gaining adoption of a decentralized protocol is very difficult, and trying to do too much makes it less likely to succeed. It also makes the stack itself decentralized, letting the elements stand or fall on their own individual merit, allowing for more organic evolution of the stack over time. I mean, I see all the time people posting and like, in it, they say it's a conspiracy and stuff like that all the Disney characters kind of look and dance, and you know, you have the kid from the Jungle Book and Aladdin, and it shows the comparison of the two figures making the exact same movements. They say, oh, it's all a conspiracy. No. What Disney did is they bought a composable, which is mainly you can plug and play, animation rig stack. And the animators bought it from maybe they had in-house animators do that, but they're repurposing films and rigs that take a long time to make. And maybe they have a deadline for another movie or another cartoon that they have to do. So they take an animated rig stack and then they plug it into another movie, or maybe they buy it from a third-party service. Like, people in the film industry do this all the time. They have all those big Michael Bay explosions and stuff. I mean, they don't custom and tailor make all those explosions for every single movie. They buy big explosion packs from some third-party After Effects animator, and they pay that guy, and then they plug those explosion packs in and they use them for all their movies. You know, in the same way, that's what composability is in the Web3 protocol. Like, somebody will, you know, buy some kind of protocol and plug it into its Web3 site, and or some open source programmer will make a protocol, like a swap protocol, like Uniswap, for example, to be able to swap any token to any token on the Ethereum blockchain. And they will just put it up out there for everybody to use. And then everybody can, on top of that, put their own front page on it, their own skin on it and stuff like that, and customize it to use it for whatever company they own. But that's what open source is. And that's basically what the internet started out as. So this is what he's talking about, is going all the way down, 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 down to that protocol layer of what our digital identity is, and making that not owned by any company or government, but making it open source code, right? And then people can start sticking their stuff on top of it. So here you have your private key, which is the very backbone of your ID. Then you have your wallet on top of that, which is more... The better word instead of wallet is your crypto asset manager. See, it's not just about finances. It's about all your information. It's about, you could get a degree from a university, and if they put it on the blockchain as an NFT, right, as an ERC 721 or something, or 1155, then that could be in your wallet along with your funds and your token and everything like that. Your degree from a university is right there in there too. And then they have off-chain and on-chain assets. And then here you have NFT and PFPs and your Ethereum name service and all the stuff sitting on top of it. But it uses this decentralized, non-owned computer code protocol as all the base layers here. And that's kind of, I think, is what he's talking about. So there are many projects, he says, so he proposes the following as main components as the Web3 identity stack. At the bottom, your private keys, then your wallet on top of that, and then a C-way, a sign-in with Ethereum, a standard for using your Ethereum private key to authenticate yourself off-chain to services. That's basically a just non-corporate, non-proprietary sign-in protocol that anybody can use, that's universal. And then other off-chain signing, off-chain storage, then your ENS, your unique self-sovereign and portable Web3 username and profile. Then in any NFT profile pics, Web3 fashion or a way of representing yourself and signaling group membership and with meaning derived from exclusivity. I don't think this was simply a short-lived fad, and I expect there to be further development with composable NFT profile pics and NFT header images. And I agree with that. I mean, I have a Chippy as my NFT profile pic, and I told myself, because I originally drew my own profile pic, and I was like, I'm never going to just jump in and be, you know, one of the herd and all that stuff. But as I've kind of grown into a digital community with some other folks that I like, yeah, I will show a little bit of solidarity of being part of that clan, I guess, that digital online clan. And so, yeah, you know, I hold a Chippy as my PFP, my profile pic now, you know, and I think that's only going to continue. And that, you know, just like we have different cultures geographically and all that type of stuff, and people feel solidarity with other like-minded people geographically, as we move into the digital age, we'll kind of take that human tendency, I think, and bring it into the digital realm. So, yeah, let's see here. He says we can keep the term wallet because a person's physical wallet includes many things beyond means of payment, like a personal ID card, maybe a building access card, contact information, medical information, family photos, and maybe even a health insurance card, etc. Concretely, wallets should consider adding the following features. C-way support, sign in with Ethereum. So recognize a sign in with Ethereum message, signing request, and display it with a unique UI that makes it clear what is compared to other message signing requests. MetaMask is an example of a wallet that already does this. Free ENS subdomains, give new users free off-chain ENS subdomain and a free starter ENS profile avatar as part of the wallet creation process. Coinbase wallet is an example of a wallet that offers free off-chain ENS subdomains to its users. Creating a wallet without an ENS name and profile should only be something advanced users do for a specific purpose, not default for the average user being onboarded to Web3. Because right now, whenever you get a new, like for example, a MetaMask wallet, it'll automatically assign you that cryptographic address, and then you can't memorize that. I mean, I guess somebody probably could, but you know, I recognize like the last four digits of that, and I can tell that that's my address, but it's just a really clunky way to do it. And if the ENS subdomains were automatically kind of given to you whenever you make a wallet, I mean, that's kind of a good way to do it to make it a little more human readable. And I guess you could choose to use that or not. But anyway, the wallet as profile, redesign the wallet UI as a profile instead of it being a wallet. Like I said, you know, purely financial application and that mindset. Think of your wallet as your profile, displaying the user's ENS primary name as their username, their ENS profile's avatar as their avatar, other profile data from their ENS records, roles they have in major DAOs. In addition to their assets, the tokens and NFTs they own are simply part of this greater Web3 profile. Rainbow Wallet is a good example of pioneering this project. So, and then the Ethereum follow protocol, which you can make lists of people that you want to follow. As you can see in like Instagram and stuff, you can already tell that you have your list of people that you follow that show up on your feed. And the same way, this could happen as well. But again, all in a decentralized manner. Nobody would own that data that you have except for you. And that's the beauty of it, is just breaking away from this centralized model of these companies basically owning your entire digital life. You know, so this is a great way to go to subvert that. And you have to start with the very base layer and your understanding of what a wallet is and all that type of stuff. So let's read a little bit more about this Ethereum follow protocol. He says, I was inspired to write this blog post in part to explain how my proposed Ethereum follow protocol fits into a broader vision for Web3 identity. An important element of identity is your connections, but the Ethereum ecosystem currently lacks a social graph. So I proposed a simple protocol that allows Ethereum accounts to manage a list of other Ethereum accounts and ENS names with tags to enable multiple overlapping lists. Think about when you're on Facebook and there's people you may know, and then you're more likely to like click on somebody whose picture appears there that you see knows 32 of the same people, you know, that you know, versus somebody who only knows one person or two people that you know. So it's that kind of social graph that person knows 32 other people that you know, kind of gives that profile a little more weight and authority or authenticity or credibility to you than the person who, you know, maybe knows one other person, and that other person is the type of guy that would probably follow a bot. So since it's simply a list of accounts, it could also be used for things besides a social graph, including a web of trust, keeping track of important smart contracts, following historically important accounts for activity, following DeFi activity for trading purposes, and whatever other uses organically emerge. Like other Web3 protocols, EFP proposes to take something that has normally been accomplished with siloed centralized apps like Facebook that owns all your data and all your friends' data and everything. EFP proposes to take something that has normally been accomplished with siloed centralized apps that bundle it with other features and instead accomplishes it with a standalone decentralized protocol, enabling the user to take their lists with them across many apps. So EFP is an example for proposed new Web3 identity protocol that's both simple and useful enough to stand on its own, as well fits into the existing Web3 identity stack without unnecessarily duplicating existing functionality. So anyway, I will link this article in the description. There's a lot more to it. I've just kind of skimmed through it, but I'm out of time. And I wanted to make sure I got episode 505 in here. Again, you can find me at Eureka John, the number one. Subscribe to my YouTube. I'm at like 991 subscribers, and I'd like to get 1,000 again. I used to have 1,000, but then I stopped broadcasting regularly, and I just kind of got burnt out, to be honest, you know. So I'm glad to be back doing the whole deal and, doing it on a daily basis. You know, I don't know if I'm going to be doing it daily, but I will try to do it a lot more often. You take care and shoot me a message if you want. Let me know. Give me a thumbs up and all that stuff. I will talk to you guys on the other side later.